Public health researcher in National School of Public Health in Oswaldo Cruz Foundation. I don't know if you know about Oswaldo Cruz Foundation. Oswaldo Cruz Foundation is a major public health institution in Latin America. So we are in 11 states. So we are in many field research. So since basic research in the laboratory, factory of vaccines, medicines, public health, communication and information in health, history of health science, we also have hospitals, primary health care, and well, that's it. So it's a very huge institution in public health. We also have an office in Africa, in Maputo, in Mozambique. So there you have a public health school and a factory for medicines, a special antiretrovirus for HIV. And now we're trying to have a new production of antivenenous serum to snake bites in Africa. So
that's it. Claire have mentioned about our Zika social science network. So 2 months after the national health emergency of public health concern, the vice president on the education, now she is the current president of Fiocruz, the very first woman in presidents of Fiocruz and also a social scientist, had an idea to have in January and February of 2016 social health, social science response to the Zika outbreak in our country, because in that time the social repercussion and humanitarian repercussion we could expect it to be a big. Yes, to be very large and important in our country. So, and we put together in the same room something about 5 or 6 social scientists in the same room. And now we are more than 50 research and with national and international partnerships. So, especially with the UK and LSE, with Clare and London School of Hygiene and Oxford University. So, that's it. Our intention here is just to share some experience about the Zika outbreak in Brazil. The voices from the Global South, it's just a provocation. So, just to stress the idea that we have a global north and global south, there's something that we have to fight against. But it's in social science, we would usually to highlight contests. So contest is so important to social science. And sometimes global health think that the earth is flat. You know, so we are the same. There's no geopolitical interest, no inequalities, and global health response just focus on the virus, vector control, and behaviors. So that is preparedness and response. But, and after the outbreaks, what's happening? So I would like to have this conversation very informal. Please interrupt with me. You can make some questions during my presentation. It's more free conversation, and this is our Brazilian way to talk about science. So, there is a statement that it's very interesting. Epidemics are as certain as taxes and debt. This is Richard Claus from 1980s. So we know more than ever that we will have new epidemics and new outbreaks all over the world. We imagine that we control it in the middle of 20th century, It's vaccines, antibiotics, therapy. So, but now we have new virus, we have new challenges, and especially after the globalization world, inequalities is increasing. So, that's what I would like to highlight with you. Inequalities in economic, scientific, and social development are a fertile ground for emerging and reemerging disease. I think that is the main point that I would like to discuss with you this evening. So, if you think on the past, so social, political, and economic dimensions are in the past, present, but we can do something now to change our future. This is the same of the climate change issues. Because now, the global north, I use this, okay, is very interested on it. Because now we identify mosquitoes in the south of England, like, Ajaptai, the another one, in France as well. So if we have global warming, we will have mosquitoes here in Europe. So this is so important to focus on climate change. And the whole planet are under threat, right? So, but we have mosquitoes a lot of time. We have malaria, we have dengue, we have chikungunya, we have yellow fever. We don't have vaccine for malaria until now. We don't have a vaccine for the four phorotypes of dengue, because we have four phorotypes, serotypes of dengue in Brazil. And chikungunya, the repercussions of chikungunya is so serious. And I know if you know the same mosquito is responsible to transmit chikungunya, dengue, yellow fever, the Ajaptai, that's Ajaptai. So, but many people are feeling pain for 2-3 years. And we also have encephalitis in children and many other neurological repercussions on chikungunya disease. So, but this is completely invisible for the world. So it's not just about Zika. Zika is a good analyzer to think on inequalities, on global and environment and social and economic issues. So this presentation is about the history of the present, because it's how difficult it is to run history of the present, because we are telling a history that it is still happening all the time. It's so difficult to be distanced to analyze what is happening. So from the social science perspective, this is a big challenge. It's not from just from the history field, but it's also from social science. Well, I don't know exactly what you know about Zika, but Zika, it was a completely new repercussion. What we knew about Zika until 2015, that Zika was a light dengue. So there are just 5 years of, five days of infection, just a middle fever, conjunctivitis, and a rash in the body, on the body. So that's it. In that time, in 2015, the Minister of Brazil, the Minister of Health, said, so May 2015, we identify Zika virus in our country, entering in our country. It's circulating in Brazil, but don't be worried about this. Dengue kills, not Zika. But suddenly, after 4 or 5 months in August and September, we start to a new epidemic, a microcephaly epidemic in our country. In primary health care in Brazil was so important to identify the relationship, the clinical relationship, the clinical determination between Zika infection and microcephaly, and malformation of the babies after 9 months, 8 months of Zika infection during the pregnancy. So, but this, it was completely new. There's a lot of uncertainties. The key word to understand Zika outbreak is uncertainty. It's not the same of malaria, Ebola, but Ebola is also a big challenge. In, I know this a few weeks ago. But it's different from other diseases. This repercussion was completely new. So we have to identify the etiology, the transmission, the epidemiological scope. There's nothing about this. And there's nothing about to say to the mothers, to women, what happened with the baby? They can walk in the future, we don't know. They can see, they can hurt. What's happening with him? He will still alive after 5 years, 6 years? We don't know. That time, we interviewed many clinicians and scientists, and they said, I never see something like that. This is completely new. It's horrible because the brain, the damage in the brain, there are a lot of calcifications, hydrocephaly, so there's empty spaces in the brain. So the damage is so serious. So this is uncertainties. That's no using the concept of paradigm. It's not the normal science. That's no stable knowledge about Zika in that time. And there, it is still, we will still have unanswered questions to respond. So, the most affected families are from the northeast of Brazil, the most unequal region in our country. They are poor, they are black, and they are women, right? Because the burden of disease, the burden of the neurological development issues are with the women, because they are mothers, they are women, there are social perspective that women are responsible to take care of the disabled children. So it's not easy, right? And it's extremely difficult to manage it. So, in that time, some feminist movements would like to take this opportunity to talk about abortion, because abortion is illegal in our country. But at the same time, in Brazil, we had more difficult and unstable political moment. So there are many conservative wave in our country. So then suddenly the feminist movement stopped to talk about abortion, because it's an opportunity to talk how to make it legal, how to include in some legal abortions, because abortion is legal in Brazil just in case of rape, incest. It's a kind of rape as well. So, in the incest, just these three causes that we can have abortion in our country. So, the main vector of this Pandora box is an old target of Brazilian public health, the mosquito Aedes aegypti. So we eliminated the Aedes aegypti two times. One in the years 50s, another again in the 60s. But during the dictatorship, the public health actions were decreased a lot. So to control Aedes aegypti, the urbanization process, the inequalities were growing, so it was difficult. And then Aedes aegypti coming back again. So this is and the right speed of scientific knowledge. This epidemic, many scientists said it was a WhatsApp epidemic. So you took pictures all the time, you record voices, you record movies in the hospitals, during the birth. Look, another one. So there's a lot of instantaneously communication, messages, sharing among scientists, and also for social movements. Because WhatsApp, we have a cell phone epidemic in Brazil. I think that Facebook users in Brazil, I think that is the higher in the world. So we are, the Facebook user is very important in our country. So at the same time, for social movements, it was so important to have the WhatsApp. And when you publish a paper about Zika, okay, you can understand. So it's in the for public access, because you know that about welcome declaration about data sharing in an open access during epidemic. So this the reducing of this gap between this communication is very intense to explore to social science. So let's continue. So now you can see that during 2014, we were expecting to have a chikungunya outbreak in our country. I don't know exactly what it means, preparedness, but we are prepared to respond to chikungunya outbreak in our country. But suddenly we had Zika. So, but in that this time it's challenging to specify the epidemiological notification, because for the physicians and health workers in primary health care, it's difficult to differentiate dengue, chikungunya, and Zika in that time. So, but it still is, because we don't have until now a good serological test to identify Zika. Right? This is another challenging and unanswered question. It is crucial to public health. So during the 2015, you have seen entering in the countryside and in the north of the country. So again, epidemiologically speaking, the number of the cases, it's not so big, right? If you can see here, 3,300 cases in the northwest. Yes, the total from 2015, to 2018, we had confirmed case something about 3,000 cases of Zika, of microcephaly with Zika congenital syndrome. But there's no historical epidemiological series. You know, epidemiologically speaking, it's too important to monitoring the disease all along history. So for dengue, we have good. We know that every 3 years or 4 years, we will have another outbreak. This year, we had 700% of increasing of dengue in Brazil, in some states, especially in Minas Gerais and São Paulo. It's something about 100,000 cases in Brazil. It's too much, right? So, and again, you can see here in pink line, the peak of northwest, in the northwest of the Zika epidemic. So, this is another interesting point. This is a data from the Ministry of Health, the Health Service and Surveillance Department. So, during 2015 and 2018, we identified
15,000 cases, almost 16,000 cases of microcephaly. The first point is, more than 30% of the cases don't present microcephaly.
So you can have here more 30% of this number. So just compulsory notification, it was microcephaly. And the case is confirmed. Imagine, we don't have a good serological test. So with PCR, identify 3,150 cases, right? Something about 20% of this number. 2,000, almost 3,000 cases are under investigation, and 400 are probable. So, what's happening with the rest of almost 10,000 cases? For sure, microcephaly was in that time underestimated, right? So, but it was syphilis, congenital syndrome. It was toxoplasmosis, another infectious disease that infected pregnant women. We don't know about this. But the Ministry of Health just focused on Zika, right? And just 36% of the cases are under early stimulation. In that time, we don't know now. So numbers are trick in when you talk about Zika. So,
excuse my ignorance, I don't know a lot about Zika. When Zika first emerged, did you know it was a new disease, or did that come after the microcephaly?
The question is not the disease, the virus itself, but the repercussions. So that's, I said, when Zika entered in our country, okay, it's another arbovirus, it's a virus, it's okay, but it's not important, epidemiologically speaking, even clinically speaking. But the repercussions of the disease, this disease, are completely new. You know, from Haddock was the infectologist that identified the virus Zika in Zika forest in Uganda, in Africa, for the first time in 1947. They were neurotropic. You know, the virus were neurotropic. They were attracted by the nervous system. But they don't care about this. They didn't care about this. In that time, there's no cases, but in Africa, because we don't know how many cases we had or we still have in African countries, because there's no confident information, epidemiological confirmation. If we have in Brazil PCR, imagine in some African countries, when you don't have a confident information system about disease. Some diseases are controlled by global health institutions, but they are estimated. There are a funny question. When you look at the graphics and the world map, an epidemiological world map created by WHO, there are some countries in Africa that they are doing estimates of the disease, estimates of public health performances. So, this is something crazy, right? There's no confident information about this. Right? It's okay.
Then I did have another question. Microcephaly, did that only come about when women were already pregnant, or did you see any cases or know of any, before women were pregnant? Are they able to?
Well, there are two important points. So, microcephaly, it's not microcephaly anymore, right? It's Zika congenital syndrome, because we can have and not have microcephaly in Zika cases, right? You have to be pregnant to be infected by Zika, but it can be transmitted by a mosquito or sexual transmission. This is a big question. How potential is the sexual transmission? Right. Entomologically speaking, it's interesting because now I know everything about mosquitoes. So the virus in the stomach, okay, the virus can stay in the stomach. It's not transmissible. If the virus in the head, it's possible to transmit. But if you identify the virus in the saliva of the mosquito, it is a vectorial competence. This is a vectorial competence. So the big question for entomologists is exploring the saliva. So, and with how many virus you can find in the saliva, right? So, but in the sperm, you can find much more virus than the saliva of mosquitoes. And once more, the threats are in women, right? Because the transmission from women, from men to women, is more effective than women to men. Right. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
No, it's okay.
If you understand my port English.
Okay?
So one more quick question. The 7,500 women who didn't have a confirmed Zika. It was toxoplasmosis, and what was the second disease that was
pretty common? Syphilis congenital syndrome, cytomegalovirus. There's a lot of infectious disease can produce malformation in fetus.
Thank you.
And it depends, because we imagined that the first trimester was too important to produce microcephaly or Zika congenital syndrome, brain damage. I think that's the best idea to share. But after 5 years, 4 years, some babies that we could not identify any brain damage, because you know that in cohort studies, where when you have epidemics, you have to organize. You know about this, epidemiologically speaking, that experimental research, right? Cohort studies is a study to following, yes, a long life and a long disease. So we identify pregnant women that were infected with Zika. One important change, for each 5 people who infected by Zika, just 1 is symptomatic. This is another problem to identify Zika earlier, right? So, and then we create a cohort, right? So there's some visible babies with neurodevelopment impairments and many other consequences. But we also have some women that were pregnant in that time that give birth with apparently babies with no brain damage. But now, 4 years after, some are developing autism. Yes, understand? We will have to follow the children for the entire life. This generation has to be observed for the entire life. Right? So, how much time I have?
Oh, as much as you need.
Just to see if I... Just 3 minutes to have a... I don't know if you know this movie from Deborah Denise. Deborah Denise is an anthropologist, a Brazilian anthropologist. Now she is under threat in our country. Then she goes to US. I don't know. I think that she was in Brown University or something near New York. And she is a militant for abortion, for men, feminists. But now in Brazil, it's challenging to stay there, politically speaking. So I would like to share just 3 minutes to have a more concrete idea what is the impact of Zika outbreak in Brazil.
O nível de tensão dessas mães, quando parece que elas estão assim, bem no corredor da morte ou algum tipo de campo de concentração, e aqui dentro elas vão ter a sentença. Então, quando elas chegam na tensão, e é assim, tão emocionada, mas a gente diz: tá bem, não tem nada. Alguma dúvida?
Não.
Difícil, né?
É demais. Com sanfona, é com esperança que vai dar negativo, né?
Eu imagino. Mas agora vamos enfrentar outra luta, né? Uma luta começou. Vai começar e a gente vamos ver o que vamos fazer.
It was very fast. I'm sorry because we don't have much time to discuss the whole film, but there's a lot of testimonies what's happening in that time. It was in the beginning of 2016, so there are many interviews with women, doctors, and families, and the social conditions of these women. So it is very impactant documentary. So, and Deborah was so great to be there. Welcome Trust funded her to go there and film everything. So.
Thank you, Gustavo, for the presentation. It's very interesting. You were talking about the long-term consequences for kids and also autism possibilities afterwards. Are there any possible consequences for adults, for grown-ups as well?
Yeah.
Any neurological kind of circumstances that can happen?
Yeah. There are some more invisible repercussions in adults. The Lambert syndrome, this is a neurologically infectious disease that Zika can produce, right? But there's no much more investigation because the focus was on the children. So the adults also can have some neurological repercussions. But it's difficult to determine the causality between Guillain-Barré syndrome and Zika infection. But it's also under investigation. So many infectologists is investigated because there were an increasing of Guillain-Barré syndrome during Zika outbreak. Right, but it's also important to say that we don't know exactly if I am infected by Zika. How long after the infection I can transmit sexually to another person? Right, it's not sure. 3 months, 6 months. Now WHO established a period, to transmit from 3 months to 6 months now. But we don't know exactly what the criteria to determine 6 months or 3 months, because again, we don't have a good serological test. Just when we have it, to have a good IgG and IgM. So IgG and IgM, some indicators that we use to identify acute infection and the memory of the infection. So, and if I had Zika, I can have Zika again. We don't know. Right? But now, Zika disappeared to the entire world, right? So, our Zika Social Science Network started with a funding from Welcome, from European Union, in a big consortium. In that time, a lot of money came to Brazil to investigate Zika outbreak and consequences. So, we are there, social science, our network was structured in that time, so we submit to this consortium. So there are more than 54 partners, international partners. We are more than 20 countries investigating Zika, right? Studying Zika. And our objective is to build a history of the present of political, social, and scientific dimension of the epidemic in Brazil, to identify social perceptions of the scientific communication about Zika in social media networks, to identify and analyze the beliefs and behaviors about, as well as the social and gender determinants of health on Zika, on the Zika risk infection, and to analyze the economic and political impact of the Zika epidemic on the Brazilian health system. I will give you just a short perspective, just to have an idea of the organogram of Zika Alliance. We are 12 work packets with different disciplines, so we are very close to communication and dissemination and evaluation, but Our intention is to have a more multidisciplinary research in this consortium, but it's also challenging. But in this perspective, this theoretical perspective, we are using the social science as a mediation to mediate and analyze how Zika epidemic articulates in very different domains of practice and its challenges. Policy, science, and social practice produced by Zika enactments. I don't know if you know the work of Anima Himal. Anima Himal works with science studies perspectives. She is from Netherlands. So we have many descriptions about the same problem, right? You can't see the same Zika in each discipline that you can describe. You will have many Zikas and different Zikas, and how to put it in dialogue with different perspectives. So I would like to share this with you. So I will explore three different dimensions of Zika repercussions. So civil society, social movements, health policies, and science. So this is the Zika virus, right? You know that? Probably you know about HIV virus, right? Have you seen the picture of HIV virus? Why not? We didn't identify the correlation in image stabilization of Zika virus and HIV. Because this is completely new, and there's no stabilization of knowledge to represent Zika. What we represent Zika to the entire world? Oh God, is this right? Babies with a little heart and mosquitoes. This is the big representation. When we explore pictures in the internet, this is the main pictures, spreading all over the world. So how we can limit, the representation of Zika? There are many dimensions and factors and entanglements that became completely invisible to the global health field, even to the national health system in Brazil. So,
I just wanted to ask, to what extent the gravity of the problem of Zika is defined by the fact that abortions are banned in Brazil? In other words, if abortions were not banned, would that have been such a big problem?
Well, the question is about human rights. I think so. You have autonomy to decide if you want to have this baby or not.
Yeah.
But the problem is, in that time, how you link abortion with damage in the brain in newborn babies. So it's a kind of a eugenistic perspective. So there are some criticals. It's not about right. So you have to right to get abortion, right? But it just in these cases, you understand my point?
If in Brazil indications for abortion are like rape and something like this, why not the risk of microcephaly?
Yes.
Why isn't it an indication?
Well, probably you have to include Down syndrome. You have to include another kinds of microcephaly. Yes. If you can look for it, open for it, which criteria you will use? I think that is the wrong way. The right way to discuss abortion, it's not to have malformation base. It's about rights. So I think that's the best way to have this approach. But this is too progressive to our conservative culture in Brazil. Okay? Right? So, for scientific enactments. So, in that time, biology, entomology, clinical studies, epidemiology, vaccines, diagnosis, I forgot to put here social science. So, they are involved to analyze Zika and to investigate Zika. It's very rich. I think that Zika Alliance Consortium is a very good example. And I really don't know how much money entering in my country to investigate Zika. It's a big question. And what we produce with this fund, and how many international collaborations we had, because all of the entire world, the scientific world, would like to go to Brazil to have a big laboratory that we became in that time.
And do these funding flows and this sending of funding focused on Zika take away from or divert funding from other diseases or health concerns in the country? Or did some of the infrastructure then also get diverted?
No, just for Zika. Just for Zika. Just to Zika. Just to explore Zika, right? Just to study Zika. Mm-hmm. It was... At the same time, it was horrible, but at the same time, epidemics are opportunities. So when I start, because we had two important epidemic responses in Brazil. One was during the 80s and 90s, HIV/AIDS. Brazil broke the patents to produce antiretrovirus in Brazil. Fiocruz is one of the factories to produce antiretrovirus. And we support a comprehensive health care since prevention to after infection. But it was a very big program and an example to the entire world. But now, our president closed the coordination of HIV/AIDS program in our country. I don't know why. Okay, I know. But it's okay. It's like Trump, but I think that is worse. It's recording, right? That's okay. And just a second. And Zika was another opportunity to... But it was completely different because the political and economic context was different. And Zika was different as well. And what we expected to have a global epidemic of Zika never happened. Never happened, right? And WHO and the Global Health Emergency on Zika on February of 2016. In Brazil and the National Health Emergency on Public Health Concern on May of 2017, right?
Is Zika Alliance a private entity, or is it government-run?
So this is a good question. The majority of institutions are public. But what is public in this international and scientific world? So in the same consortium, we had Fiocruz, it's a public institution that produces
vaccines, medicines, diagnosis tests, for no cost reasons. And in Zika Alliance, we also have Sanofi. It's a French private company to produce vaccines, medicines, and diagnosis tests with profit interests. So this is one of the big challenges. We didn't share the data to them. So this is very important about global health and international concerns. So everyone would like to share the data. It's open, right? But which criteria we will data share? When we will share the data? In what form we will share the data? So to produce what? For private reasons? Or to public reasons, to a common good to everyone? So this is important for public health, for public global health. I think that is the big issue to explore here. And biobank as well. So the intention in that time is to create a biobank. Epidemics are opportunities to get some exceptions in legislation, normative rules, and values. So welcome declaration determines that if you receive welcome funding, you have to share the data. You have to publish in an open science journal, right? Okay, but which conditions? Data sharing is good at all for everyone, for every country, especially low and middle income countries. So this is a big issue. It's a big subject to social science and political science to explore, right? And we have a lot of rumors, and the rumors, it's not complete out of the blue, right? So the link between Zika virus and the use of pesticides in agribusiness in Brazil. So it's okay, that's no biological causality, but the imaginary, the context can produce it, because we know the use, the abusive use of pesticides in agribusiness in our territory. We know about this, and we know about the consequences. The contamination and the toxic use of pesticides in Brazil, it's so good. There are a lot of health consequences. So the imagination, it's not completely wrong. And the other side, we have some rumors of measles vaccines, the interaction of Zika virus and measles vaccines in the Northwest. So the anti-vaccine movement, we have to explore these hypotheses. So there's a lot of rumors. And the other challenge is how to differentiate microcephaly in Zika congenital syndrome. Because all the time people are talking about microcephaly and Zika. This is wrong. Because Zika congenital syndrome is more than microcephaly. So this is another issue to explore in scientific connectedness and descriptions. Well, we are publishing these studies in PLOS One very soon, I don't know when. But now you can identify here another scientific opportunity during outbreaks. You can see here many developing countries, right? USA, we can talk that China is a developed country, so scientifically speaking, Canada, England, Australia, Germany, and India is Pakistan and Italy. But if you see the number of collaborations now, since 2016 and 2018, we are the second most country that have published in international journals. you know how important is publishing in scientific field. If you not publish, you doesn't exist. You don't exist to scientific field. So it was so important. And we receive international funding. And collaboration is so important to do it. And USA is a big rub to collaborations. Imagine. So Zika was in Brazil, right? And if you see the collaboration between China and Brazil, it's so weak, right? This line, just it. How they are the third most publishing country in the world on Zika? Can you imagine? With USA cooperation. We share the data with USA. We share clinical studies with USA. And the contracts, the agreement with NIH and CDC are so aggressive. You have to share the data. You are receiving money from the US. You will have in trouble if you don't share the data. Give it to me. So that's it. With Europeans, we know, because you can share the data with the US, but in agreement, you only can share the data with the US institution. I can't share the data even with national institutions. So there's a struggle here, there's a constraint here. Until now, we didn't harmonize the data on data sharing nationally. Can you imagine? The Brazil was the most affected country about Zika. And why we could not integrate the data and harmonize the data? And then, epidemiologically speaking, so harmonize it's so important. How you can compare data all over the world, all over the country. So this is so important. The data in Brazil is so confused because there's a lot of influence. And how sustainable is it in time? Because we already share the data. And now they can publish along if they want. So this is a global health issue, right? So, Zika social enactment. So, it's uncertainties, fear of the future, especially with families. My wife was pregnant during the outbreak. Can you imagine? I was a student Zika at that time. That's a lot of questions. She was dressing a burqa, you know, just the eyes, in a hot weather, warm weather in Brazil. So, can you imagine 40 degrees Celsius degrees in the summer? 42 Celsius degrees, but she is from the middle class. I can put nets in the window. I was using air conditioning. Our car has air conditioner as well. We have to have some safe behavior to protect and to use very expensive lip nets, right? But in this lens, in the favelas. I was there in the field work in Rio. Claire knows very well what I'm speaking. Field Cruz is an island in the middle of the most complex and biggest favelas complex in Rio. So asked me to stop the car. I would like to take a picture here. There is a river, but it's not a river. It's a lot of lack of sanitation and well, and children were swimming there. In the middle of. Well, that's it. Poverty versus multiple needs. Social determinants of health, gender, race, and sanitation. So the question of human rights and gender inequalities and how to run, because we would like to have a more open discussion. Ethical issues on research procedures. So, just to give you an example, Brazil became a big laboratory, as in every country that suffering as a new epidemic. So Ebola was born in DRC, for instance. So we identify informed consent in English and Norwegian with families. So how they can read in English? What's happening with the procedures of ethical process in our ERC unities in Brazil? So how to protect people against scientists? There's no follow-up to them. The results of the exams, the follow-up of research, so people from all over the world came to Brazil to run new studies on Zika. Come on. There is a, in scientific words, there is a community that we can call them epidemic hunters. You understand? So since the H1N1, through Ebola, SARS, Zika, and Ebola again, they are all over the world making money and running research at the same time. And I'm sorry, they are in the north, right? So they can have funding to run research. Health policies. So focus on better control initiatives. Individual and female responsibility. Claire, you can talk about this more. Cleaning your house and postpone pregnancy. It was her lecture in Brazil 1 month ago. And comprehensive healthcare access, it was so important, but the response are completely different. The response in the southwest of the country were so few. We didn't have a network on healthcare to disabled people and disabled children. In the northwest, they create, in some states, new units and more spreading in the countryside of the states to improve access to children and families. But the response was completely different depending on the state. In that time, we had 5 ministers of health. 5 ministers of health in the middle of the outbreak. Right.
Yeah, so I have a question about that.
Right.
Because you were mentioning earlier that the Northeast and the Northwest were the most affected, but it was only affecting a particular group of people, lower social and economic classes. I'm wondering what is peculiar. I was constantly wondering what was peculiar between the people living in the Northeast, and now you've introduced people living in the Northwest with different responses. And I'm also quite curious about the political events that were happening around the time that Zika virus was spreading. And my question is, how is scientific knowledge informing or changing political policy decision-making around socio-economic issues that make people living in conditions such as people living in the northeast of Brazil susceptible to avoidable infectious diseases? And if it's effective, how effective has it been?
Yeah. Good question. I think that we will have another seminar. Political contest, knowledge producing, how it can influence to improve policies. So, one thing is so interesting because
Scientific institution in Brazil, for instance, Fiocruz, for instance, important institution in Belém do Pará, Bahia Federal University, Pernambuco Federal University. So we have important and strong scientific institutions in our country. The scientists are so good. We have a kind of tradition in public health since the beginning of 20th century with Oswaldo Cruz, Carlos Chagas, and many others. So I don't know if you know the symbol of Fiocruz is a castle. The idea in that time is the castle of science. How important is the science to structure a national state? How we can talk about development, social and economic development, besides scientific development. So it was important to have a good response.
Yeah.
Yes, Fiocruz structured in that time a committee, emergency committee, to to advise Brazilian government, right? So it was so important. It is one point. In time of political and economic instable, this is our hypothesis, scientific institution was so important to respond to the outbreaks and public health challenges in this country. So to have good and strong scientific development is important to public health response in this context, right?
Yeah.
This is one hypothesis that we analyzed during the outbreak.
Yeah. But would you say that the emergence of Zika was also a response from changes in the political or socioeconomic?
No. I think that in the first time, so if you are a public health researcher or have at least an idea of public health, when a virus enters in your country, this is a new virus. You don't know exactly what will happen. So we have to observe. I think that that minister that no worries about Zika, we have to pay attention and focus on dengue because dengue kills. I think he is, we will observe. Until now, what we know about Zika is But we know that when different serotypes of dengue entering in our country, we have to observe what will happen because there's no immunological protection to this virus. We are completely open. What happened? So, and we needed to know what happening in French Polynesia. Because they had a Zika outbreak in 2013, right? So just to put a very short lens of scientific knowledge in epidemiologic knowledge. So, I don't know if any response, but let's continue.
We'll continue.
Okay. And so, comprehensive different states reported after 2017, Zika disappeared. We had, during the summer of 2017, a new yellow fever outbreak in the southwest. What is the problem here? Is if we would have in that time, urban yellow fever. This is very critical in terms of infectious disease. But we have vaccine to yellow fever. And then all the time, we stopped to talk about Zika, dengue, and chikungunya. In the summer, when you have a lot, mosquitoes everywhere. So, and we start to talk about yellow fever. And
never coming back. Okay. There's no prevention, information, risk communication, preparedness, anything.
My colleague from Brazil, probably is a testimony. Yeah, you know about this.
So there is a lot of mosquito control initiatives that increase in that time of the outbreak. One World Mosquito Problems trademark, they are funded by Gates Foundation, right? The mosquitoes are infected by a bacteria. It's a more ecological perspective. The bacteria is Wolbachia, and when infected by Wolbachia, mosquito cannot transmit dengue, Zika, and chikungunya, right? So there's a big experiment in Australia, and now the biggest release in the world was in Rio de Janeiro. So it's challenging to control and how to change the population, the mosquito population, from the natural mosquitoes, from population infected with Wolbachia. So until now, part of the funding, part of this program is funded by Ministry of Health in Brazil, and part is funded by Gates Foundation. And Oxitec. No, I don't want to enter here because it's, I am in UK right now. This is a UK private company. These are genetically modified mosquitoes. There's a lot of ethical issues and many consequences. It's a big mess, but we had some mayors and municipalities that bought, they have a contract with Oxitec with transgenic mosquito releasing in some municipalities. That's a war against mosquitoes, I think. Okay?
Sorry. Are there any studies about the consequences of these mosquitoes?
Transgenic mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot of studies. There are a lot of controversial studies. There's a competition. So scientific arena, there's a lot of interest in it.
But is there already some kind of concrete evidence saying that these kind of mosquitoes should or should not be used?
There is. There are many evidences in favor and against, right? It's experimental. So how critical is to have and pay for experimental action in your country to our people? Come on, it's experimental. There's no safe evidence about this. Don't do it. Yes? So, HPV, it's mm-hmm. correct. The HPV vaccines is the same. Spread. HPV vaccine contracts to low and middle countries. Brazil is one of them. You know about the future. It's also experimental. The vaccines, you just have good evidence after decades using the vaccine, right? I'm not against it. I'm not in favor about the vaccination. But we are not sure the results of HIV vaccine, HPV vaccine, right? So again, this is the propaganda of our government during the outbreak. A mosquito cannot be stronger than an entire country. So this is the wrong message. So, and here you have the beautiful Camila Pitanga. Camila Pitanga is a fantastic actress, but a woman, right? She represents the prevention. Who is responsible to run the prevention, right? To clean the house, to avoid stolen water, right? A woman. Again. And postpone pregnancy, right? You have to have opportunity to her clear about this. So, again, big war.
how toxic is using pesticides. So I'm about to spread this. And there are lots of private interests on it. Which neighborhoods in Rio are buying pesticide from companies to spread in their environments, right? It's a kind of bubble. So a mosquito will respect bubbles, right? But if you use a pesticide, you have to have a strategy. You have from the around to the center, right? You concentrate, it's a strategy to use pesticides, but there are not any plan to use pesticides in neighborhoods in Brazil. And there's no evidence. So we are talking now about a very important issue in global health, antimicrobial resistance, right? But also mosquito is pesticide resistant. Right? This, we have this phenomenon now. So Darwin was right, you know, the theory of evolution. So the organisms evolve. So, all right. So this is an example of neighborhoods and the big pictures that we keep in mind. So sexual transmitted, it was completely invisible in our country. This is a statistic modeling, epidemiological modeling, to show that how women are vulnerable to sex transmission. So, and another invisible question, more than 15 of Brazilians do not have access to sanitation and clean water. Even in big cities as Rio, you have some neighborhoods without sanitation. Mosquito doesn't have a class distinction. They can fly, right? So from this lens, and you know, Rio, so we have mountains with residents, and rich neighborhoods and rich buildings are close to the mountains. So women, the majority of affected families, as already said about this, social anxieties. Women were made responsible for domestic vector control initiative, pregnancy postponement, and child care. More than 90% were abandoned by their partners in the state, we can say, because they are married during the outbreak, and if they have disabled children with Zika congenital syndrome, they were abandoned by their husbands. More than 90%. This is the statistic of Mothers Association, Women's Association, and the
Vulnerability. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. So, invisible women, Zika and disabled children. Zika turned disabled children visible in that time. Malformation notifications increased. This is important repercussions. Social and health responses were funded by Ministry of Health and International Health Research Funding. This is a trick question. We receive a lot of money from to research, but we are using the research funding to offer health assistance to the families. The same money. We cannot mix these labels. One money is to run research, and the other money is to have access. But our government is cutting the budget to health systems. Next year, you'll have a cut of 30% of the budget of mental health. But the repercussions, it is not over. The pandemic, so the consequence, the repercussions of Zika is not over. And 36% have access to early stimulation. Less than 10% have equipment to support mobility in home care. Oh, great. Zika and the signature will become invisible again. So there are here some recommendations. I would like to highlight some important topics here. International funding to our global health discussion here. International funding and cooperation should be oriented towards reinforcement of scientific development in low and middle income countries through a mutual learning process. Improvement of listening social movements and response to society needs through a participation in science. It's not public engagement, right? Because public engagement, how to engage people to risk communication, to convince people, to get prevent behaviors. So, no, it's not that. But how to improve participation in a more democratic perspective in science, in public health, in public policies as well. So, promotion in a global health preparedness to interdisciplinary and intersectorial approach. So, everyone is just investing in vector control initiatives. It's a big amount of money. To OCTEC, to World Mosquito Problems, and many other. Oh, come on, let's talk about intersectorial work. So we have to support sanitation, to fight against poverty, to have a good condition to live. If you have opportunity to run in these lands here or here, but in Brazil or in India or in African countries, you have opportunity to see what happened there. In a no-colonial perspective as well, this is difficult because they are diverse of cultural backgrounds, right? It's not easy. So strengthening of the reaction of national and international scientific communities to threat of the new outbreaks of Zika and other arboviruses. There's no money anymore. We have money just to follow the cohorts until the end of this year. We have not have money to continue the cohorts and follow up studies to the next year. International funding doesn't care anymore about Zika. Now we are just talking about preparedness, Ebola, and so what's happening when you talk about aftermath, post-epidemic? This is a lack of technology, funding, policies, and many other issues to respond and to face. So in our country, there's a decreasing of investment in science and technology. There's a reduction of social protection policies in Brazil in many low and middle income countries. The problem is just not in Brazil. Right, there's a geopolitical perspective, there's a lot of private interest to cut money to public science, public health, education, so in many other fields. We have to pay attention on it. That's not a Marxist perspective, please. And not a communist perspective. It's just to take a look and have some insights what is happening here in the UK, in the US, in Germany, in Brazil, in Colombia, in Argentina. So there's a movement to privatization and to cut social protection all over the world. So I think that's it. I have more to test it. I would like to share a good experience that we have last year in Brazil. Zika outbreak, lesson learned, recommendation, and preparedness. If we put in the same room scientists, biomedicines, entomologists, clinicians, and social science, social movements, and policymakers to discuss and to build recommendations to face Zika in Brazil. There's a beautiful document, very important document. We are disseminating the document. I can share with you if you want about this. It was not easy. Not easy. So the discussion was very hard. Social movements were overwhelmed about scientists. So
And but the result is, I think that it's so good. There are five main axes or topics, 18 recommendations, and more than 52 deployments. And we are trying to influence the parliaments to adopt some of them. Okay? Just sit. I think that is. And we will have next year, I hope we can bring to LSC an exhibition of Zika in Brazil and Global Repercussions, Science, Health, and Society next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I know we are at our time limit, but has anyone got any questions for this topic?
Sorry.
Anyone needs to leave, feel free, but if anyone wants to stay for questions.
Okay. I wanted to ask, do you think that Zika should have been securitized in the way that it was? And looking back, what would you say the positive outcome was of the securitization, if at all?
Positive outcome of securitization? So, I would like to follow the Foucault's working. There's a book or seminar, Population, Security, and Territory. So, thank you very much
for coming.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I lose all the time. I talk a lot. And so, we in securitization, for me, I didn't share with you this idea before. We are moving the discourse of epidemics from eradication. There's no idea anymore to eradication. I think that World Health Organization had a good example. It was a smallpox, eradication of the smallpox all over the world. But polio is coming back again, measles is coming back again, but there's a lot of re-emergency. So they are moving the discourse of education to mitigation. Mitigation means control people, limit the epidemic in a specific territory. What is happening with Ebola? How to contain Ebola in DRC, right? It's a big threat if Ebola can come to Europe, can come to other countries. So I know I can understand this point. I'm completely agree, but it's not just it. This is just to mitigate and to put limit in the outbreak. I think that's one important question to when you think about securitization. So the discourse of securitization is changing a little bit. So this is a big global health and hegemonic perspective for me. But talking about hegemonics, it's not just in the north. There are some classes and some power authorities that in charge to reproduce this discourse. So it's so clear. Securitization, for me, when you look at the history, we have a kind of spasmodic reaction against epidemic. So when an epidemic is coming, you react to it. That's not preparedness. So that's just response and how to mitigate reactions. So if you would like to have a really good securitization, you have to talk about human rights, human diversity. You have to talk about gender equity. You have to talk about intersectorial perspective. This is securitization. How to offer health and safety to the whole world.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are submitting a new paper on this kind of discussion of not securitization, but exploring the discourse of mitigation, especially in international agencies as WHO.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I but when you're talking about mitigation, do you think that mitigation might be important for these type of diseases if we are considering things like climate change, for example?
Yeah. How to mitigate the implication of climate change?
Because then, if we are considering that all the kind of viruses and they're going to spread more likely with climate change, then it would be interesting to have these kind of barriers, then the disease can stay in one place. And is that feasible? Like in the case of mosquito-borne diseases, for example, I imagine that Ebola is another system that may be easier to kind of concentrate in one place, but with mosquito-borne diseases, for example, and other kind of animals, it's also a little bit more difficult, right, I imagine, to contain.
Yes, there is a research group in Fiocruz, Carlos Machado, and other colleagues that are running a new research on epidemic and natural disasters and has a cross-cutting perspective on climate change. And which repercussions and analysis we can have using the health repercussions during these phenomena. Right.
What is his name again, sorry?
Carlos Machado.
Thank you.
Carlos Machado. They are more involved with the disaster in Brumadinho.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know about the dams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. In this year, I think that Brumadinho was this year, right? The beginning of this year, it was a disaster in Minas Gerais.
Mm-hmm.
It's a private company. That could not control the breakdowns,
yeah.
Yeah, the breakdowns of the dams, right? So the disaster kills more than 300 people, and also animals, and the ecological repercussions are so good, so big. So there are a lot of consequences in the ecosystem and health. And they are analyzing this, and also with the climate change and using epidemics. But now they are focused more on the disaster of Mariana and Brumadinho. Yes?
When you're talking about the transmission rates being higher for women through sexually, for being sexually transmitted, has that resulted in any shift in discourse in terms of women's sexual activities and how they just thinking about how the infection rates seem to be kind of low in terms of the evidence that it's transmitted through sex, but is that given opportunities for the government state to start dictating how women specifically should engage in sex?
Can you add something? Yeah.
Is around discourse then, to talk about women's sexualities and how women's sexualities are constructed and discussed as part of public engagement or public health programming or whatever. And I think that image that you had was fascinating, especially given how you've talked about Zika and its repercussions as racialized as well. So how has that tied into the kind of discourse and messaging, perhaps, that has been put forth?
Yeah. Well, I think that this is not new. This is, I don't know if you know about the neo-institutionalism perspective. There's a concept that they are using transitory dependence. There's something that you repeat all the time, like a behavior or a systemic repercussions. So the gender, the question of the genders, the homophobic culture are in the science, are in the policy making mind. So this is so clear for us. So
I think that it is reproducing, but now it's worse because our government, not just in Brazil, if you look at US and India, they are reproducing the misogynist and sexual harassment in policies, and sometimes it's scientific basis. We have to deconstruct this. You know what I mean?
It's just taking a data set and adjusting your argument, or just to kind of show that it's this. Backing up what you're saying.
Yes, you reproduce all the time women's responsibility to sexual transmitted disease.
Because if the figures are showing that they're more likely to be infected, then that's how you shape your argument as opposed to there being.
But the interesting question is, why Brazilian authorities didn't recognize Zika as a DST?
STD.
STD. I'm sorry, DST is in Portuguese. Yes, this is a big question. I interviewed some health surveillance authorities in Brazil, and they said that, well, we have mosquitoes all over the country. We cannot estimate how important is sexual transmission. So, but why you don't communicate it to society? Because sexuality is something difficult to talk with, especially in this moment.
Is it that that males are more likely to carry it and transmit as opposed to displaying symptoms, like in some STDs? Women are more likely to display symptoms, but men can carry it and pass on to other partners without. Or is it that actually just like likely to be infected as opposed?
I didn't understand.
Oh, sorry, I don't know if that makes sense. Yes. I guess I was asking if the statistics are reflective of more women being infected or men simply not displaying symptoms. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Look, again, there is a framework here in public health. So public health traditionally focus on child's mortality and pregnancy. So what is the most important thing during Zika? Pregnancy, not women, right? And disabled children. This is economically important. This is a kind of bioeconomic approach, bioeconomic approach. So that's why we reproduce it all the time. It's kind of boring discourse all the time. And so what is women health exactly?
And is it only in the Zika case or also dengue chikungunya? Is it also transmitted sexually?
We are not sure. This is something interesting. The scientific repercussions in the scientific agenda. So we identify the virus in the semen. And at the same time, we also identify some part of the dengue virus in the semen and chikungunya, part of the chikungunya virus in the semen as well. But how potential is it to transmit it, we don't know. But Zika is confirmed. But we know, we don't know why, because if it is, can be transmitted sexually, why? Probably we will have a more important outbreak all over the world. That's why WHO was in panic in that time. If it was concentrated in Brazil, it's okay, we can end the global health emergency. In spite of, we still have many unanswered questions, important questions. So if I have Zika, I don't know if I can, how long I can transmit Zika. Yes? And if I had Zika, I can have Zika again. So I'm not pregnant now. I had Zika. But I will be pregnant. When I will be pregnant, I can be infected by Zika again. There's antibodies. There's memory of the Zika infection in our body. We don't know. And about the children.
Sorry, I don't know.
Okay.
There was Zika in other countries, right? Like in French Polynesia, as you said.
Yes.
And we don't have any information
about
that
we
in
are,
other
no.
countries?
No. The question is, in French Polynesia, abortion is legal. And they are an island. And we have to check. I don't know exactly what's happening there now. We are revisiting the archives, the data archives, to identify what's happening at that moment, but there's no detailment of in the data to build good evidences. But in Africa, Zika is endemic. Come on, what's happening in Africa? Well, we don't care about it.
Zika's in Africa?
Yes, start there.
Yes,
we identified Zika virus. There's a film in the YouTube, Zika, the Untold Story, that's called the story of the infectiologists during 1947 that identified for the first time the Zika virus.
Is that how you guys ended up figuring out what Zika was? Because it didn't go by the Zika name, did it?
Yes. Because
so
it is in the yes. It's in the same name.
I see it framed
because
as,
it was in the Zika forest in Uganda.
I always see it framed as like this brand new disease that no one knew what it was when it emerged.
No, there's not
so
a new disease. This is not a new virus. It's a new replication.
Okay.
A new framing.
We knew the virus, but we didn't know about this new replication. And we have to revisit it more than 70 years to the past, right?
So that might mean that there were a lot of microcephaly cases mm-hmm. in all, many other countries, but we
probably
just never
we don't know,
those.
Never connected. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we did this big outbreak. We had this outbreak in Brazil. We don't know when we will happen another outbreak. How we can respond to another outbreak, immunologically speaking, mm-hmm. right?
If we move from eradication to mitigation, how do we prevent reproducing the inequalities of the them versus us, like what we saw with Ebola and even Zika, that you know we need to contain it, and this idea of containment and contain it in the global south, contain it in Brazil or India or wherever it might be, how do we then stop that narrative if we move to mitigation? And or
I don't know. I really don't believe in revolutions anymore. I'm too old for it. but I think that we will have to influence a new paradigm. In public health now. I think that what we would like to do this is now how social science can mediate, can translate different disciplines to innovate in public health response, not just in outbreaks. Because mm-hmm. that's what I said in the beginning of my presentation, in an eco world is a fertile ground to emerging and re-emerging diseases. So it's not a problem just to Brazil. This is a good thing. We can treat other countries, not with the army, but with virus and epidemics. So this is a good point, how we can move from mitigates to another paradigm, I don't know, for the future. So the current political context, it's not so optimistic, but I am optimistic.
I first went to Rio in 2018 when the yellow fever outbreak was, I think, like in this in the midst, and I didn't know there was a yellow fever outbreak, but I found out because I was going to Isla Grande.
Did you get vaccinated?
Well, yeah, so when the night before we left for the island, where 12 deaths had taken place, and they were all foreign tourists.
Isla Grande is so beautiful.
It's beautiful but deadly at the time.
Because all of the deaths that took place
in Rio were on the island. All the locals were shooting monkeys.
Yeah.
And our Posada host marched us down to the hospital clinic, and we walked past, I don't know, a queue of locals, and we got vaccinated straight away, and it felt really kind of uncomfortable at the speed at which that happened, and we were prioritised. And when you were talking about yellow fever attention and Zika funds being cut, I just wondered if there are, or what the statistics are on foreign infections or for tourist infections of Zika, and if that has any relation to the attention it's getting globally, because so many of the deaths in Rio were foreign tourists specifically.
What's your question?
Oh, if there's data on tourist and foreign infections of Zika in Brazil, and if that has any relation to the global attention that it's received, or from...
I forgot to mention a very short detail. In 2016, we have the Olympic Games in Brazil. The entire world was in panic about Zika, right? So people all over the world came to Brazil. So the outbreak could be really global in that time. So, but if you go to, I don't know if when you enter in Brazil in the airport, you saw some advertisements.
None, and I didn't see anything from the foreign government or health advice. So we were really clueless. And then when our Posada host mentioned it, and he was like, "It's muy importante," we looked online, and then I found like a bit more information about the amount of people, the numbers of tourists who had died, and the number of people kind of within Brazil who had died. But that was the first sort of time I was aware of it. And this time this year, when I went back again, I was very adamant that my boyfriend got the vaccination before we left. But again, there was not much information that we found. And when we entered the airport in Rio, again, no screening. No interaction with health awareness.
Yes, because the outbreak was over in that time. So we just focus on yellow fever. Yes, it is. That's why I am saying that there's a trajectory dependence. We react in each epidemic. It's a kind of reactive response. So. Brazil is very good on campaigns, but campaigns is authoritarian. There's no questions on you use army in the territories, looking for stable water or rats, depends of the outbreak. So this is an important territory in the beginning of 20th century in Oswaldo Cruz. It was Oswaldo Cruz learned with the Pasteur Institute in the end of 19th century. So this is, in that time, this is how public health works, right? But it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable, even if you want to mitigate, if you want to control it. And don't tell me anything about sovereignty.
Sovereignty,
yes, in national countries. Oh, you have epidemic, it is not important. Look at the global example. We enter in the country in the middle of a civil war, so we have to control it all the time.
Any more questions? No? All right, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your patience with my English, both English.
It was great.